Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
आप सुन रहे हैं SBS हिंदी। अपने रेडियो पर हर शाम सुनिए हमारा कार्यक्रम। आप हमारा कार्यक्रम हमारी वेबसाइट पर और SBS मोबाइल ऐप द्वारा सुन सकते हैं। sbs.com.au/hindi पर जाएं।
Today we have Liberal Party Senator Paul Scar at our studio, who is the Shadow Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. He's a Liberal National Party Senator for Queensland. Welcome to SBS Studio, Paul.
Great to be with you, Natasha, and great to be with your listeners.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, we have recently witnessed unprecedented anti-immigration rallies across Australia, a heated national debate over migration levels, and it's still continuing, and even remarks targeting, a migrant community, with the Liberal Party literally at the center of these discussions and forced to damage control. How do you view the state of Liberal Party today after everything we have seen in the last few weeks?
From my perspective, the fundamental values of the Liberal Party provide that it doesn't matter wherever you come from originally, it doesn't matter your ethnicity, it doesn't matter your country of origin, it doesn't matter your gender, your religion. When you come to Australia and you take that citizenship pledge, you are an Australian and you belong in Australia. And the Liberal Party has a proud history going back to the 1960s in terms of dismantling the White Australia policy and recognising that we should have a non-discriminatory immigration policy. And that is fundamental to our values. So it is fundamental to the discharge of my obligations as Shadow Immigration Minister and Shadow Minister for Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs to stand up for those core values. And in terms of our immigration story as a country, we're a proud migrant country. And our history tells us that our migrants, wherever they come from India, from the African continent, this year is the 50th anniversary of the influx of people from Vietnam who've made a great contribution. I've attended an event this morning with our wonderful Vietnamese Australian community. Wherever people come from, they make such a wonderful contribution to Australia, and that's part of the Australian story. So from my perspective, it's about telling the positives, reinforcing the thankfulness we have for the contribution of the Indian Australian community, who make a wonderful contribution every day, not just through their work and through their businesses, through their technical skills, but also helping Australians in need. And I see it every week, grassroots community organisations helping their fellow Australians in need, and that represents the very best of Australia's values.
You know, I'll come back to my question again. You know, we saw Liberal Party in the center of these discussions and forced to damage control certain situations.
Yes.
I was reading one of the opinion piece by one of the, you know, high profile editor, and he said, looks like Liberal Party is in a mess. Would you agree?
I think we must focus on our base values, our core values, and people need to be very careful when engaging in loose language and loose rhetoric, because it can be very damaging in terms of our relationships with communities, and it can cause distress in the community. So from my perspective, that is the message I give to colleagues. Please know that when you say something, it does have an impact in terms of communities. And Also, we should bear in mind that our political opponents are waiting for those slip-ups when they occur, and they will use them for their political benefit as well. So, great care is needed in terms of language that's used in relation to these sensitive issues. And it applies, I think, more in the immigration space and the multicultural affairs space than any other era of politics, because we're talking about people. We're talking about people's sensitivities, sensibilities, and great care is needed. That's my message. We should be celebrating our immigration stories and the contribution that is made by our wonderful multicultural communities.
Give us a sense, what's the mood within the party, especially after Jacinta Price's remarks, which appears to have some impact on the party. Where does it leave the party, the leadership, and the opposition leader?
In relation to Jacinta's remarks, I think it needs to be noted that ultimately Jacinta stood down from the shadow ministry, so he's no longer part of the shadow ministry. And Susan, as our opposition leader, Susan Lee, took appropriate action in that regard. And I think that's what had to happen, and that's what did happen in all the circumstances for the reasons which Susan outlined in her statement. And I think from my perspective, I would like to see that as closing the chapter on those events, and we now move forward in a positive way. So there were consequences. There were consequences in relation to that.
You're the opposition migration spokesman, and I'm sure you're closely scrutinising all the events that has happened in the last few weeks, the immigration rallies, the debates and everything. What has been your assessment of the situation to migration overall, especially after how the number has come out? It's lower than your target, your Liberal Party's target, which is 140,000.
So we took to the last election policies in relation to the permanent immigration intake to bring it down from, it was about 185,000, that was the Labor policy. And the policy we took to the last election was to bring that down to 140,000 for 2 years and then gradually increase it again to 160,000, which was the level under the coalition in our last year of government. So that was the policy we took. And it's important to note the motivation for that policy was primarily in relation to housing and infrastructure constraints. Now, what I say in relation to this, and I always say this, this is a question of government policy. It is nothing to do with people who come to this country as migrants. So the fact is, unfortunately, in 2014, we managed to build 219,000 dwellings in this country in 2014. Fast forward to 2024, and the number had fallen to 177,000. And that was due to cost pressures, supply chain issues, etc., having that impact on housing supply. So that was the policy we took to the last election. The policy... we're undergoing a policy review process now, and I have carriage of that as the shadow immigration spokesperson. From my perspective, it is absolutely important that the policy we formulate to take to the next election is based on facts, is based on evidence, is based on is considered, and is able to reflect the position Australia is in at the time we go to the next election, which will be in another 2.5 years. As you've noted, and as your listeners would be aware, during the COVID period, there was a huge drop in net overseas migration. It was in negative terrain. Coming out of COVID, there was a huge increase. So the first year out of COVID, it was over 500,000. Second year, over 400,000. The last data we have, as you mentioned, is down to 315,000. That is still approximately 100,000 greater than the average, the 15-year average before COVID, 15-year average before COVID was about 215,000. So there are still questions there in relation to what is the optimum figure in Australia's national interests that takes into account all the different visa streams, which are incredibly important, including family, including skills, including our humanitarian visa scheme. What is the right figure moving forward? And how do we engage in the long-term planning and analysis at a federal government level? So, to be frank, we're not in a position where we're having these strained debates as we've been having over the last few months. And one of the things I think is needed from the federal government is, instead of releasing a permanent migration intake, which was released a few weeks ago, with three sentences.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
That's all that was released, three sentences, is actually providing commentary around it in relation to what was the discussion with each of the states in relation to their skill shortages, in relation to their infrastructure requirements, to actually provide that transparency for the Australian people. Because unless you provide that transparency in a way a vacuum forms, and people at the extremes of the debate have an opportunity to get a foothold and to put out misinformation and to create concern in the community. So I think the way these debates are managed is absolutely critically important. And I know because I'm close, very close, to the Indian Queensland community, and I've had discussions with other communities or other areas across Australia. I know the pain and distress that's been caused, particularly when that pamphlet was released prior to the marches, which specifically targeted the Indian community. And I was contacted by community members. It was a Monday, Parliament was sitting, community members reached out to me, friends. These are friends who I work with on their grassroots community activities, and they reached out and told me how distressed they were. I took the first opportunity in the Senate, actually convinced one of my colleagues to give up their speaking spots in the Senate so I could give a speech in solidarity with our wonderful Indian Australian community and talk about the contribution that's made. And I think that's what all of our political leaders need to do at these times.
We at SBS Hindi, we did release a short reel of your speech that you made throwing support behind the Indian community when the pamphlet was released. It was very well viewed on our Insta and social platforms. But then, you know, the Jacinta Price made that remark. What went through your head when she made that?
I mean, that's a good question. Jacinta made the remark. She then walked it back that afternoon, and then there was some further media, which was done the next day. From my perspective, Jacinta made the comment she's made, and that is what Jacinta
said.
But
did you speak to her?
So I did speak to her the next morning, and I've been on the public record in terms of this. And when I sat down with Jacinta and spoke about it, she actually told me how close she was to the Indian Australian community in Alice Springs when she was deputy mayor. And her children have part Indian heritage, and her children had worked for Indian small businesses. And I think she gave a really good speech to Australia Today, one of the major Indian social media outlets in Australia. So I heard all of that, and I think all of that was really important. I have also heard the distress from members of the Indian community and how much they wanted to hear an apology.
And still, we didn't hear any apology from her. Did you ask her to apologise publicly?
I don't want to go into personal discussions I have with elected members. I shared what I shared with you because I think it demonstrated Jacinta's connection with Australians of Indian heritage, but I wanted to put that on the record. So I think people are giving speeches, they're saying things all the time, but you know, great care is needed because there can be consequences.
But was she really remorseful about what she said?
Well, again, I'd refer you to Jacinta's words.
Okay.
So there's no doubt in my mind that Jacinta has a high regard for the contribution made by Australians of Indian heritage. And I heard that. And I heard that from Jacinta's heart. But I'll leave the rest of the commentary to what Jacinta said and how she's explained it.
I understand you don't want to, you know, divulge the details of your personal, conversation. But if I can ask you this way, did you tell her the damage has been done or, you know?
Well, I don't really want to go into the conversations. But I think what we've seen from Susan Lee as opposition leader is a concerted effort to engage with the community since the events of those couple of weeks. And I'm actually in Melbourne. We're having some further meetings today in Melbourne.
Yeah. You know, you've been meeting Indian community after all these, what we have seen in the past. What concerns are they raising? Because you're the Shadow Minister for Immigration and Citizenship. And how do you reassure them that they are safe, they are welcome, and they really belong here?
Well, let me say what the messages I give to the community when I meet them. First, that every Australian who takes that citizenship pledge and becomes an Australian is an Australian. Full stop. And that's the first point. And you belong. You belong. There's no question. So that's the first point, to reinforce that. Second point is in relation to the Indian Australian community, I talk about how much the contribution is valued to Australia, and I see it every day in terms of wonderful businesses, in terms of the values of our Indian community, family values, how much education is valued. I talk about the generosity of spirit in relation to opening up community festivals to the whole community, and I talk about, especially emphasise, the fact that when there are Australians in need, some of the first people who step up to help are members of our wonderful Indian Australian community. I saw it during the COVID-19 pandemic when I visited a gurdwara at Eight Mile Plains that was producing meals, especially for international students from all over the world who were in need. I saw it from GOPO, the Governing Organisation of People of Indian Origin, in Cairns, when that community was hit by floods. And again, they were reaching out to their fellow Queenslanders with food and assistance. I see it when Australia is impacted by bushfire, by floods. Whenever that occurs, the Indian Australian community rallies. And we need to talk about that. We need to celebrate that. Every opportunity I have in the Senate, I talk about it and put it on the record to thank the community. So reinforcing those points is so critically important. What have I heard from the community over the last few weeks? I've heard some terrible stories from the community in relation to how they've been impacted. I've heard of people going to work the Monday after the marches and having their fellow employee come up to them and say, you know, I marched. I've heard of mothers having to cancel birthday parties in parks because they were scared to go to their local park on the day the march occurred. I've heard of people, senior representatives of the community, not going to the Queensland Governor's residence for a reception on the day of the march because they were scared. And that's unacceptable. That's not the Australia I know and love. And those stories are heartbreaking. I've heard of a lady of Sri Lankan background being approached at a supermarket in a fruit and vegetable section by a woman who asked if she could speak to her and said to her, maybe you should go back so my children can buy a house. Terrible, terrible stories. And those are the consequences of when the debate becomes intolerant and goes into the extremes when particular groups are targeted or named the way that occurred before the marches. And this has consequences and causes great distress, and that needs to be recognised. And it's heartbreaking when I hear those stories because I know how much our wonderful Indian Australian community belongs and the contribution that's made. It's heartbreaking.
So how can we fix it? Do you see a future of, a migrant community, the Indian community, especially in when it comes to, representation of, these communities within your party?
Absolutely, I do. And absolutely, I do. And I think that's part of the, in some respects, that's the engagement by our wonderful Indian Australian community and all political parties. Right. And this is and I know all the communities I work with, there's a cross section of views, as you'd expect. Why wouldn't there be? And I think it's so important that our political parties, especially the parties of government, including my party, that there's opportunity for candidates from diverse backgrounds to seek pre-selection and become candidates. And we've had some wonderful candidates. And Dave Sharma serves in the Senate with me, and he's obviously has Indian heritage. And I've worked closely with candidates from all sorts of multicultural communities, and that is so terribly important. It is so important, and it's in accordance with the values of my party. I joined my party as a 17-year-old. I've been a member of the party for a long time. And those are core to my values. They're core to Australia's values. So it's really important that we move forward, continue to engage with the community, have the discussions we're having today, very important, and for people in the community to know that their contribution is honoured, is celebrated, and that the Liberal Party knows our wonderful Indian Australian community is a blessing for our beautiful country, an absolute blessing. And I can't imagine Australia without our Indian Australian community. They're part of the Australian story and have been going all the way back to Gallipoli when people of Indian heritage served in the Australian services. Part of the Australian story and a beautiful chapter in our Australian story.
So when the next election comes, do we see more faces in Liberal Party from Indian community?
Well, I would like to see more multicultural faces from all communities standing as candidates for the Liberal Party. I'd like to see more women candidates standing for the Liberal Party as well. And I think if the Liberal Party is to be successful, as I hope it is, at the next election and elections to come, there will need to be. That the Liberal Party will need to reflect modern Australia, and Susan Lee, through her leadership, I think is reinforcing that point on a continual basis, and it's a very, very important point. We need to, as a party, we need to reflect modern Australia.
We are still 2.5 years away from the next election.
Yes, we are.
But how prepared is the party today?
We're going through a process, and from a political viewpoint, when a party goes into an election, they get smashed, which we were. We were smashed. Then
a lot of work needs to be done.
Yeah, a lot of work needs to be done. And I say in relation to areas such as immigration, there is work to be done.
Yeah.
It isn't just a question of someone having a slogan or a soundbite. There is work that's needed to be done. So, for example, if I can just touch on some of the matters which I'm considering. How do we make sure that all the skills we have in Australia, in our multicultural communities are actually being utilised at the moment. So in terms of people's professional experience being recognised, their overseas work experience being recognised. To give you one example, in the construction industry, I had a meeting with members of the construction industry yesterday. It's estimated there are 18,000 new Australians, people in Australia with relevant construction skills who aren't being utilised in the construction industry because their skills aren't being recognised. How do we turn that around? 44% of people who've come to Australia are in jobs under their skill level. So how do we maximise the skills that are there in that 44% to give them the opportunity to contribute at their skill level and enhance their skills? That's an important issue. In terms of our temporary visa program, where are we most successful in terms of people coming to the country on skills visas and making a positive contribution? How do we accentuate the success? How do we address where there are weaknesses? There's a lot of work and analysis to be done in that regard. How do we deal with the family reunion program? And a lot of your listeners, and I have this feedback, will talk about the length of time it takes to get partner visas, etc. Yeah. So how do we address that so that people are united with their family members so they can contribute to the country as a family unit? That is an issue which needs to be addressed. And then there's the issue around student visas and temporary work visas, working holiday visas, but you have to do the work in relation to each of these visa categories before you can actually put out the policy and say, this is the answer. There's a lot of hard work that is required to be done, and that means engaging with stakeholders, and that means engaging with groups representing all the different communities in Australia to get their views with respect to what they're seeing. What are the frustrations? Frustrations with English language testing, the cost of English language testing, for example. And I know there are members of our multicultural communities who have spent a lot of money trying to get their English language test passed. And now that's proving a barrier in terms of their skills being fully utilised. Let me give you one example of something which I find unacceptable from my perspective. Someone can come to this country from, say, Kenya, where they've been educated in English from primary school, and they've been educated in English in primary school, in high school. They've gone to university in Kenya, for example. They've gone to university in London. And I'm thinking of a particular example here. They do a PhD at the University of Queensland, get the Dean's Commendation for their PhD, and then they're asked to do an English test.
Yeah.
I mean, this is nonsensical.
So, if
there are a whole range of issues that need to be considered, and we as an opposition need to utilise the time to, A, hold the government to account, which is our obligation as a opposition, and then, B, to develop the suite of policies to take to the next election. And I say to all of your listeners, please contact me. Be part of that process. Tell me what your thoughts are. Tell me what your experiences are. And quite often when I go to multicultural events, I'll talk to people who are doctors or accountants or engineers, and I'll say, tell me what your experience was in terms of getting your qualifications recognised. What was the journey? How can we make this easier? Because we've got to utilise all the talent that's in this country. We've got to utilise all the talent that's in this country. That is absolutely vital from my perspective.
I'm really glad you brought up that example of English test. So let me ask you this. If you were in power, so for example, if you come in power and you'll be the immigration minister, will we see the abolition of English test for these PhD students? And how will you tackle this?
That is certainly something I want to look at. Right.
Okay.
That is certainly something I want to look at. And it's an example which I carry with me and provide in interviews. So that is certainly something we need to look at as a country, because from my perspective, it's unacceptable that someone's been has been educated in English their whole life, has higher degrees, master's degrees from overseas, and then is forced to sit an English test. I mean, this is nonsensical. So why is this the case? It's absurd. And it's in one sense, it's laughable. But on the other side, it's hurtful.
Yeah.
It's hurtful.
They're spending thousands of dollars.
And then there's the economic cost.
Yeah.
Then there's the economic cost, which is just ridiculous. So I think there's work to be done in that space. Another example, if I can give you, in terms of English language, and where it is a barrier. And when we talk about multiculturalism, I think one of the focuses has to be removing barriers for people of different backgrounds to achieve their full potential in the country. And at one end, you've got the esteemed academics, professionals it's ridiculous to impose those requirements there. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got people who've come to Australia from very dire humanitarian circumstances,
yeah,
and they haven't had the benefit of a lot of formal education at all. And I see cases where the provision of English language services is not actually working for a lot of members of those communities. And what I see at a grassroots level is what does work perhaps better is grassroots community organisations, where you've got the people teaching the English are actually also conversant in the language of the country of origin, and there's a safe space for people to come together and access to other community services, and they're getting great results and great outcomes, where the more formal English language services are maybe not achieving those outcomes. So one of the things I'm passionate about across the board is empowering grassroots multicultural community organisations who are doing great work in the community and getting great outcomes. And I think that's something I'm keenly interested in, to make sure that we provide an opportunity to people to get those English language skills which they need to successfully enter the workforce.
SBS रेडियो से डाउनलोड करने के लिए आपका धन्यवाद। हमारा पूरा कार्यक्रम आप कैसे सुने? इसके लिए sbs.com.au/hindi पर जाएं।